Hey everyone, welcome to Pilot to Co-Pilot, a leadership podcast on growth and collaboration with me, Antonio Neves, and Jason Lindstrom. And today we're digging into leading through uncertainty and what it really means to lead when the ground keeps shifting, when you don't have all the answers, and when people, yes, people are looking to you anyway. Jason, this is a great topic. You ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's go, Antonio.
All right, let's rewind 5 years, and we're talking about uncertainty. What would you say you learned about yourself during the pandemic when absolutely everything became uncertain?
You know, as a leader, I found myself, you know, just thinking back at that time frame, right? Like, I had to be a biologist, a virologist, whatever you want to call it. I was the dad of the organization. You name it, everybody looked to me to have leadership and to, you know, what do we do? How are we going to manage this? And, you know, it was tough as a leader at that time. We had 99 employees at my organization. There was, you know, the vaccine. What do we do? How do we go, you know, how do we do these things? And so it really was just taking a step back and breathing, you know, taking a deep breath and saying, We've got this. We've got this as an organization. I run a credit union, and so, you know, we had to remain open for our members. But we had team that was concerned. You know, we had people that were genuinely scared of what was going to happen. And again, I'm no biologist by any means, but I had to like read into it. They were asking me questions about things that I didn't have an answer to. And that's one of those things when, as a leader, you step in and you just go with the flow. You just make things work and make things happen. And, you know, we looked at a number of different things, a number of different ways to manage our business, from, you know, closing the facility and just being open in the drive-through. There was a time where we had entire branch teams out for 2 weeks with pay, while another team took over and ran the branch, and then we would bring them in. And so if there ever was an infection or something that would happen, we'd jump on that and get those people out of the branch and bring the people back from home. And, you know, we were pretty fortunate. We had, you know, cases along the way, but just in general, just really sticking with, you know, our plans to stay open, serve our member. Our IT side, we had to pivot and get a bunch of laptops and, you know, move people to work from home scenarios when we were really just a business that didn't do much work from home at that point. It was tough.
But we learned a lot during that time when, like you said, when so many things shifted. We had to work from home, the computers, all those kind of fun things. And we're going to talk about other people here in a moment and your staff and being responsible for them and them looking to you. But I'm curious for you. And of course, a lot of leaders are going to listen to this. For you, when nothing feels stable, what do you anchor to, or what do you suggest others anchor to during uncertain times?
You know, it's going to sound kind of cliche, but we stick to the mission and the vision for the organization. As a member-focused or customer-focused organization, we had to be there for our member, our customer. We had to be there. We had to be open. You know, this is financial services. Financial services is a very personal thing for people. You know, we had calls from the regulator saying, hey, let us know if you have a run on people taking cash out. Because at that time, we didn't know what was going to happen. So, you know, we're loading up on cash and getting a lot of cash in the branches because we thought, oh, members are going to come in. You know, they'll go through the drive-through, they'll take out their life savings, they'll go put in a mattress because they don't know what's going to happen. But for me, it was really just staying focused on the mission, and that's to take care of people and be there as a financial institution to help and make sure that our customers, members feel like they are taken care of and that we are there for them. And so we kind of hung our hat on that. I did, for sure. You know, we can't forget what we're here for. If we would have just closed the doors, said, yeah, we're closing up, you know, use our ATM, I don't know that would have gone over here. You know, I'm in Maine, and you know, Mainers are very diverse folks, as far and hardy. You know, the farmers and hardworking people, and you know, we're way up here in the northern part of the United States, and you know, kind of away from it all. But it affected them too. You know, and you know, in reality, I just looked at it as, you know, we're all human beings, and we're all going through this together. But we're here, and we provide a need and a necessity for people.
Yeah, it's interesting because let's talk people here for a second, because I think a lot of leaders, when they're going through trying times, difficult seasons, whether it's 2020 or today, we think internally, right? We have our employees, but we forget, to your point, that not only do we have our employees that we have to take care of, but we also have our customers, our members, people that we have to service as well. So it's people facing in two different ways. So I'm curious for you, with that being said, what is the role of transparency? How open are you as a leader, not only with your team, your staff, but also the members and the customers that are reliant on you? Like, is there a such thing as being too transparent?
You know, I don't think there is. You know, so much in today's world, so much back and forth happens. As far, you know, the infighting, the political differences, racial divides, you name it. There's so much of that that goes on. And I'm a leader that does lean on transparency with my senior team all the way down to the frontline team. Everyone knows what we're doing, the mission, where we're going, where we're headed, why we're doing things. I try to be very explanatory in my delivery. We're very direct with our members of what we're doing in the community to serve them and the reasons why. And it shows with the growth of our organization. We've grown a lot over the years that I've been at the helm here, both in terms of asset size, but also members. The word of mouth is spread. You know, it's just one of those things that transparency does matter in business. And I think you see that a lot now currently, right? That, you know, what's going on? What is Doge doing? What are they getting into? And, you know, you see, oh, they're laying off a whole bunch of people at this agency. But you don't know the specifics or the why. It's just all kind of done slash and grab kind of thing. And, you know, that transparency would do well in government too, as well, right? You know, having that visibility. And I think, you know, when you run an organization and you look at that transparency, that being human, that really matters. It makes a difference. It makes a difference to the employees and then the customer or member. And I think that is a big part of what I'm all about. It's about being human. You know, I want to put my shoes on, you know, my feet in my customer slash member shoes and try to understand what they're going through on a regular basis. And I don't know that a lot of for-profit companies do a lot of that type of analysis. A lot of times it's, you know, the stock price of the organization or, you know, where can we make cuts to make sure that, you know, the shareholders, the board of directors are happy. And I'm more about, you know, let's spend money. Let's do what we need to do to make sure that our members and our team are taken care of.
Yeah, hearing you say that, I feel like when you provide that transparency, it gives you a little bit more grace, whether it be with your staff or with your customers. As you're talking, you know, this is called co-pilot to co-pilot. I think about when I'm on a plane, and you know me, I travel a lot, and there's a lot of delays. And let me tell you something I don't like. If there's a long delay and we're sitting on the plane, but I do not hear from the pilot, and he says nothing or she says nothing, you know, folks get frustrated. But when that pilot comes on, when she or he comes on, they say, hey, ladies and gentlemen, I have as much information as you do right now. I don't know what's going on. You can hear like a collective sigh that happens on the plane. Do you experience that the same on your end? Like, even if you may not know the answer, what's going to happen tomorrow, when you are human, as you said, it gives you grace, it gives you space and even empathy and compassion can show up.
Yeah, I really do. I think there are times, you know, the mantra that I have is that, hey, we're not going to please everybody all the time. We're going to please as many people as we can, and we're going to do it by being authentic and being real. And you know, in the credit union business, we're in it to make loans for people. And there are times when I've told my team, making a loan for this person may not be in their best financial interest. It's definitely not in the interest of the credit union, right? If we're, you know, someone's got a 400 credit score and they want to take their debt ratio, you know, above 100% or something like that, it's like, that's not in the best interest of all of the members. So, you know, I think it goes to your point. You travel a lot more than I do, but I've been in that same plane, so to speak, where, you know, what is going on? Why are we waiting here for so long? And, you know, we have no updates at all whatsoever. And you just feel that stress. And I think it's the same in financial services. It's a lot to come in knowing in the back of your mind as a member, my credit's not so good, but I've got to go sit in with these folks and try to negotiate, try to figure out, will they give me a credit card? Will they give me a loan to pay off my credit cards? What is it going to be? And so, you know, we really try to be transparent, open and honest. And, you know, before we even start entering a loan application, and I think the team takes a look at that and says, hey, you know, what's your financial picture look like? Like, give me the honest truth before we start putting everything in a system here. And that transparency in that, I think, is so important in business, to be able to, you know, kind of look out for your member, customer.
Yeah, I want to talk about decision-making here, especially when pressure is involved. But before we go there, it's interesting, going back to being human, one thing about being a leader, one thing about being a decision-maker is, and I see a lot of folks I've coached over the years, they struggle with this. There are going to be times, there are going to be seasons, there are going to be quarters. Guess what? You're going to have to make some tough decisions, and you, as the leader, are not going to be liked. The community may not like you. Some members may not like you because you turned them down for that loan. Some employees may not like you based on the decisions you had to make. I'm curious for you. People love you. You're amazing. And I'm sure there have been seasons when you've had to make some tough decisions, when people got frustrated with you. How do you internally, as a leader, balance that? And what would you say to that man or woman who has to make some tough decisions and they're concerned about the ramifications of that and how they're going to be perceived?
Yeah, I always just take a big deep breath. You know, I said earlier, we're not going to please everybody all the time, and that goes to employees as well. You know, and we do have to make those tough decisions as leaders. What I always try to do, though, is really justify that decision-making process and take a look at it and say, you know, what are the pros and cons of doing this? You know, is it in the best interest of the organization? Yes. Is it in the best interest of the employee? Maybe not. Maybe it doesn't fit for them. Maybe they're under the wrong leader and we need to move them to another department. So we have to figure out, how is this person going to fit in another department? We're big on our senior team about saying, we don't want to move a problem. We don't want to take a problem employee and move them to another area of the credit union if there is a problem. And so what do we look at about that person that are the good qualities, and what are the bad qualities, and how can we overcome this? Is there more training that's needed? Is there more desire for them to do something else where they would be happy? And we've got all kinds of stories about that. What's tough is when you get someone that you can't fix and you can't train them into something that they aren't. That's the toughest part. And then sometimes you just have to part ways and you have to make that tough decision.
Yeah, and it's funny. Sometimes those folks end up coming back to you a few years later, whether it's that member who says, thank you so much for not giving me that loan and being real with me, or that employee that comes back years later and says, thank you for letting me go. You know, that was a good decision. Things worked out. Speaking more on decision-making, obviously making decisions as a leader can be tough in a normal environment. However, when the pressure is on, when you're in a heightened environment, we can look right now and there's so much going on in the economy, the market, we can talk tariffs, all those kind of things. And I think you touched on this a little bit with your last answer, but do you have a decision-making process? Is there like a rubric you like to use, or certain questions you ask yourself as you're making decisions, especially say under times of high pressure? So things aren't rushed, or you aren't too fast in making the wrong decision.
Yeah, I slow down. That's just it. You have to look at everything. You know, we're in the financial business, so every ratio, every loan, every deposit, all these things, they all fit together. And then you kind of get a scorecard from the regulator as to how you're doing. And, you know, when you turn one dial over here, the other dial moves the other way. And so it's always a thought process of slowing down, taking a look at what we're doing. You know, we're a pretty innovative credit union, an innovative business, but I don't think that we're bleeding edge. We want to see what's going on with some of the products and services that we're offered that we could pass along to our member. And so it really is about slowing down. I'm also a big collaborator. I'm a really big thinker in terms of the group think, having committees to work on processes so that we get buy-in from the team. So we have a number of different committees that people work on together, a marketing committee, an IT committee, an audit committee. And these are made up of individuals in the organization, whether they're in leadership roles or they're the doers, the boots on the ground. Because I really believe that when I slow down and take a deep breath, it causes everybody else to do the same kind of thing. And, you know, as a leader, that's what you're imparting. You want people to act a certain way. You want them to be on board with a concept. And what a better way to get them on board with a concept is you have them help create the concept. It's kind of leadership common sense, but so many organizations don't look at things that way. You know, you have a product development department. They're the only ones that develop products. Well, the teller line and our front lines, they're the ones that get to see members and stuff. So having them give some feedback and pass that along allows us to put the best product in place or the best service. Or we hear, you know, we could do rate surveys all day long and look at our competition in the market for setting CD rates, but we know what the members are looking for. They come in and they tell the frontline team. So that VP of the frontline team can pass that along. And, you know, maybe we do a pricing special on a CD if we're looking for deposits, or a loan special, those kind of things. And that group think also just causes buy-in to the mission going forward. You know, when you talk about pilots of a plane, they have a mission. They've got a flight path that they have to stay on to go from, you know, Portland, Maine to Los Angeles, where you are, Tony. You know, they got a flight plan and they've got handoffs along the way, but you've got weather that comes in. So you maybe have to adjust on the way. And, but they do it together. They're in that seat together, and whatever the FAA has lined out for their flight path, that's where they're supposed to stay. But there's deviation. I mean, how many times have you been on a plane and you had turbulence and they've had to go to a lower or a higher altitude? It's the same thing in business, I believe, that, you know, the best laid plan still can have hiccups along the way. You can make those modifications, but if you have buy-in, then you at least know you're going the right direction. I'm getting from Portland to LA. I'm getting there.
Yeah, I like that for a couple of reasons. One, as you're talking about LA and Portland, I was speaking of travel, last time I came there, I was so excited to get there a couple of days early. And yeah, I spent a day in Detroit that I did not plan on spending in Detroit due to some reason outside of my control. But also I'm hearing you very clearly say that leaders should not operate in a silo, and hearing from the people who are walking the floor on a daily basis makes a really big difference. And sadly, I've seen a lot of folks, once they get those promotions, they get certain titles, that communication below them, it just stops, unfortunately. And you said something really interesting, and I want to double click on it a little bit. You said you got to make sure you slow down. From a tangible perspective, Jason, what does slowing down look like? You said that my visualization, although I was thinking about you, I know you like to ride a bike. Is it like getting on your bike and your spinners and riding? Is it slowing down and having some conversations? What does slowing down look like?
I do that, you know, to step away and stay fit, right? It's really just, you know, hey, here's something, let's do it. And sometimes you make those snap decisions. You're like, yeah, absolutely, that works, no problem. Easy peasy, right? It's those other ones, the tougher ones, you know, when we're looking at, let's say a 15% increase in employee benefits from the healthcare provider that we offer. You know, that, how do we take all that in? That 15%, I don't like to pass it on to the employee. I don't think that's fair. But at the same time, you know, it's their insurance. It's what they're going to be using. And so you have to take a deep breath, and you have to back up, and you have to look at the big picture. And it's like, well, if we can explain this in a way that we share costs of the 15% increase, or we provide it in a way that our organization is going to pick up 75% of that increase, that lessens the blow. But it wasn't a snap decision. It was something that I had to take a breath on. I had to talk to the HR folks. We had to talk to our insurance broker. Hey, you know, we have this. Is there anything else we can do? Should we go to market and try to find a different insurance provider? Then I start spinning off onto the tangent about, well, if we go to a different insurance broker, now does that mess up everyone's primary care physician and what they're used to? Do the copays all change now going to a different insurance provider? Does that make it so that we as an organization pay less, but I put more stress on my team when they have a health issue and they need to go to the doctor? So again, just taking that breath. The bicycling side is like, hey, if I'm not feeling well, I'm not going to be pedaling at 70 or 80 RPMs. I might be doing 60 when I'm out there. If I'm going up a mountain on my mountain bike, I know I'm not pedaling as fast going uphill as I do going downhill.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, you just take that breath and it's like, sometimes your cadence is at a high speed and other times it's at a low speed and it's maybe a slower climb, but we still get to the top, right? We still get to the top of that.
We still get to the top. Absolutely. You said something interesting just now. You said the word we. Even communicating in that hypothetical example of a health plan, like, we share the cost. Can you talk about how important that is, even in communication during challenging times and uncertainty? It's not us. It's not them. You said we. And I feel like that gives people a lot more ownership and buy-in versus making it company employee, that we, that us language.
Yeah. You know, we are an organization, right? It's not just by terms. It's a we. And you're so right. You're spot on that. If it was always about I want to do this, I want to do that, and not listening, that's the biggest key, is the listening part of it. And the we, as you say, you know, we do look at everything. I look at we as being the members. I look at it as we being all employees, we being the board. You know, trying to have alignment with a volunteer board of directors. They're not paid. They don't take stock prices or anything in a credit union. So it is a collective we from the top all the way down. It's a we. And so it means something to me. I think when you come on as a leader of an organization and you're new, especially moving to Maine, let's say, or moving to LA, and you're lucky enough to land a job like what I have, and you get there and it's all about me, it's all about I want to do this, and that's not going to work. You're going to be put in the corner and no one's going to talk to you. And I think when you do those kind of things and you move forward and you're fortunate to get a role like this, it has to be about we. You know, the first thing I did when I got to the credit union here was sit down with everyone on the staff and ask them what they like and what they dislike about the organization. And that's so easy to say, let's do that. You know, when you come on board and your organization may be 1,500 employees, not at my, when I first started, 55 or 60 employees, and it wasn't that hard to do. But it meant something to everybody. It meant that I was one of them. I was a team player. I wanted to hear what was working and what wasn't. And I promised them that I was going to deliver on providing a better working environment. And I heard what wasn't working. And then I also took, you know, hey, this is working, so let's keep doing it. But it was a collective we all the way around. And I think a lot of organizations, the leadership tends to, you know, discount that fact. They're in that role. They're making a good salary. They may have stock options at a for-profit company. And, you know, that person in the corner just picks up the phone or, you know, just sends emails or manages the social media. But they're also part of the organization, right? And they need to be happy in their role and what they're doing to help move things forward. So your stock options continue to go up, if that's the case, if you're for-profit or something.
As you talk about that, it makes me think about, as you know, I'm on the road pretty much every single week. And when I go work with teams and have conversations leading up to the events, I can already tell what I'm walking into based on the language that the leaders use. And if I hear I and me versus we and us, like, I already know what to expect. And I get so excited when I hear the language of we and us. Before we move on from this topic of like decision making, specifically decision making under pressure, I really want to make something tangible for our listeners. And I'm curious for you, I mean, obviously you've had a rich career. I'm just thinking about you've done things here in California to Virginia to Maine and beyond. Is there a decision you can think of when you had to make a very tough decision for your organization? And can you walk us through that? I know you may not be able to reveal all the particulars and who it was and all that kind of fun stuff, but is there any tough calls that you had to make that even today you think about as a powerful case study for yourself?
Yeah, I try to think back because you're talking about over 28 years of experience now. And I've had lots of those tough decisions. Nothing in particular comes to mind, but anytime you have to let someone go, that they might believe that they've contributed to the organization. And we've had to, I say we again, there's been times where that's happened, where the person wasn't necessarily, you know, cutting it for what we wanted to do. The empathy wasn't there, the work ethic, the way they communicated, that kind of thing. And, you know, we had to make that tough decision to part ways. And, you know, the organization is better for it because we did that. And we found somebody that's just absolutely fantastic that moved into a similar role that is doing that type of thing. And those decisions are never easy when you have somebody that, in this particular case, moved across the country to take on a role, moved their family, and we had to part ways with the person. So that's challenging, and that's hard, and that grates on you as an individual because you never want to see someone hurting, right? At least I don't. I'm one of those kind of people that, I'm a middle of the road kind of guy. I've got friends on both sides of the political spectrum. I always try to remain in the middle, but also understand that everybody has their own viewpoints and everything. And the last thing I want to ever see anybody have is be hurt, especially by me or the organization. And that's what's tough. And I think we need more empathy in the workplace today to understand that we can have these kind of conversations, and that you, Tony, can have your viewpoint. Jason, I can have my viewpoint, but we still can get along and be friendly and you know, work toward a common goal no matter what it is.
Yeah. And I want to talk about empathy here in a second. But as you were talking about that example, I'm thinking back to one of our conversations. And for all you listeners, Jason and I get on the phone now and then and talk shop. I think back to when, if I'm correct, you lost a job, redundancies happen, you name it. But then you still showed up at some event of the person who had to make the decision to release you. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I got laid off, must have been back in 2000 or so, from a credit union. I was running the business development department. The organization hired a person that came in from community banking, and they were looking to cut expenses and everything. And one of the things that I believe was talked about was, hey, in community banks, our branch managers do all of the business development. And I was running business development for this organization, and walk in on a Monday and get kind of ushered into the boardroom and, hey, we're letting all of you go. And so my entire team got let go. And it was one of those things where, you know, this person will walk you back to your office, you can collect your things and you can leave. And this is a credit union, you know? And I was like, wow, what am I going to do? First of all, with my life and everything. But as soon as I got out the door, my team was calling me, you know, hey, what's going on? What's going on? So we all met at a restaurant just down the road and kind of just talked things through, because all of our heads were spinning as to why this happened. For me, it turned out okay. And I think for those others that were on my team, it turned out okay. I had a job within 2 or 3 weeks at California's largest credit union, doing something that I love doing, which is, the advocacy work for credit unions as a chief political officer. So I was handling all the government affairs, but I looked at it. Of course, you walk out of there and you're like, you're cussing and swearing in this crappy place. You know, you just go nuts with the feelings that you have because I was doing a good job. I was employee of the year, just the year before. I had nothing wrong in my reviews. And then I realized it wasn't about me. It was about the organization and the direction they wanted to go in. But it takes a while to get over that as far as understanding that it was a management decision. It's not personal. It feels personal at the time because, hey, I'm employee of the year. I got great reviews, had a great boss. Everything's cool. You know what? It's got to be me. So that's what you think about during that time. But fast forward now to 2024, this CEO of that organization's being inducted into the Credit Union Museum, the Hall of Fame. And I heard about it and I was like, it's in New Hampshire. I can drive down and it would be great to see her get inducted in the Hall of Fame. And so I went to that and, you know, you have a little bit of nerves going in because the last time I saw her was when I got laid off in 2000, right? So 24 years ago, I'm not holding a grudge at this point. But at the same time, it was like, it was bittersweet in the fact that I was big enough to make that decision to drive down and I was big enough to like face her and she gave me a hug and she said, she's so proud of me. Those kind of things mean a lot, you know? And it's just telling of who she was because I know she made a business decision and she had to be in the seat that I'm in today, having to make those tough business decisions at times. We've never laid anybody off, but we've had to let people go. And again, like I said earlier, I don't ever want anybody to hurt or feel that hurt, but it does give me that empathy to live that way. I don't want anybody to go through a layoff situation at my organization. You know, and I'm not saying that would never happen under my watch, but I'm going to be damn well sure to make sure that it doesn't happen. You know, we got to try to figure things out other ways.
I mean, listen to that story right there. First, it's amazing. You said a couple of things that really stand out. I think even during those trying seasons, we have to remind ourselves that it's not about me. I mean, if it's a performance issue, that's one thing. But most times, if it's a business decision, like you just said, we can't take it personal. It's not about me, even as challenging as it can be. Also, what's amazing about that situation now, here you are today as a leader, so many years later, is that those trying seasons, those tough things, and we have to carry that box out when we didn't experience it, when we didn't expect it, it helps us today to be a leader. It prepared you for that today. So I think that's amazing. We're going to start landing the plane over here. So a few more questions, though. But this is, you know, right now, listen, we're in really unique, I think, exciting times. I think people are really afraid right now. You know, we hear things, we talk about AI revolution and jobs are going to be lost. We look at the economy, we look at the dollar, we hear tariffs. All you got to do is look at a newspaper and you're going to be afraid, right? I got to say, Jason, I'm equally very excited about the way things are right now as well. And in the midst of this market, when you read headlines of things that may scare you, if you're not digging a little bit deeper and you're only talking to certain people, what would you say to that leader right now whose team may be concerned? How can you maintain or build some type of calm in what people perceive as chaos or turbulence?
Yeah, you know, and that's interesting because something just happened in credit union land, as I call it. You know, the two board members of NCUA were fired. And so we're left with one board member. And I had some people on my senior team like, hey, do we want to announce this to our team? I said, no, we put our nose to the grindstone. We do what we're doing for our membership. We go forward, not worrying about what the regulator is going to do, but taking care of our business. There are so many outside factors to everything these days. You know, like you said, the tariff thing, the, you know, inflation, cost of gas, cost of food, cost of insurance, cost of living. My God, the prices in Portland area here in Maine have just skyrocketed over the years. You know, a lot of my staff can't afford to live in Portland proper. They have to live 15, 20 miles out, if not more. And that's painful to have to deal with. But at the same time, you have a job, You've got a great place to work. Our business is taking care of people. You can't be in a better industry right now, I think, than at a credit union. We're doing so much in the community to help stem this tide and the problems that are going on. And there are still a lot of great folks in America that are working on behalf of others, trying to end hunger, taking care of animals at our local animal shelters, the trails, all, you know, Maine's fantastic. Don't get me wrong. It's a fantastic place to live. So we have a lot of nice things like great trails and connectivity with each other. And, you know, so that's how I handle all of that is those outside things. Yeah, it could be a factor, but your solace is here where we work and, you know, we're doing what's right. We're doing what's good for the community. And so we keep that up. We keep going. We put our head up and just go.
Well, speaking of keeping your head up and going, last question for our conversation here today is, again, in the midst of what people may perceive as extremely challenging times, all those things we just mentioned, I'm curious for you, in the midst of all of that, as a leader, what has you optimistic right now? What gets you excited, even in the midst of what people may call as chaos? Why are you optimistic right now?
You know, what's going to be interesting, my answer is change. You know, if we're not changing and we're not evolving into something better and working towards something better all the time, what are we here for? You know, we're all here on a short time on this planet, whatever the average age is now, 78 years old, 80, 76. We're only here for a short period of time. You know, the rocks out in my yard here in Maine are much older, right? And I think it's just, if we're not evolving and we're not changing and we're not looking at how we can all do better, A, as a society, but B, as an organization, and C, as a community, what are we? You know, we're just going through the motions of life and waiting till that time runs out. And that's what motivates me, is that to see changes being made, the stuff that's being changed for the better, you know, it just even within our own organization, changing up, you know, our vision statement a little bit to be more member-centric, was a great change that I had to announce this week. And it was just so well received. It's just great. But that was thought up by, you know, our consultant and the board of directors, and just being able to say, hey, we're doing well where we are, and there's more to come. You know, I think that's fantastic, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that's a beautiful, beautiful way to end, and reminding all of us that there's absolutely more to come. Jason, I love this episode. And for all of you listening there, I want to say thank you for listening to Pilot to Co-Pilot, a leadership podcast on growth and collaboration with me and Antonio Neves and Jason Lindstrom. And we look forward to connecting with all of you on another episode very soon.
Yes, we do. Thanks, Antonio.
Thank you.